Well, I wanted to begin tonight with perhaps a slightly unusual thought by telling you how much I love Eeyore as a literary character in a children's book. You know, he is the rather dour grey donkey in the stories of Winnie the Pooh. And I think the reason he's such a great character is because, well, that is what some people are like. A bit of an ER, always, you know, kind of glass half full, maybe a bit pessimistic. If you've read the stories, you know that if someone says to him, "Good morning," Eeyore usually responds, "I'm sure somebody somewhere is having a good day." But actually, I mean, it's so great in a children's book because it's teaching people that obviously there are different kinds of people and maybe there's a bit of an Eeyore in all of us. But also subtly that actually Eeyore is right a lot of the time. In some of the adventures, he's the calm, unflappable one. He's the one who keeps going. And actually he's right sometimes in what he says. Now, I mention that to hopefully ease us in. Because what I want to say to you tonight is one of the things Solomon is trying to teach us in this book is to have what I call a healthy Christian pessimism about life. Ecclesiastes teaches us to develop a balanced, healthy Christian pessimism about life. Meaning really a realistic perspective and expectation of what life in this fallen world is really like. I don't mean that we should be pessimistic people or discouraged or despairing. I don't mean that at all. But just that we should, like Ecclesiastes, be honest and realistic about what life in a fallen world is really like. Life is short and fragile, which is the main theme of the book. And there are many evil things that take place under the sun. So if you look with me tonight at chapter 1 and verses 12 to 15 in particular, these verses are a part of Solomon's introduction. He's setting out the main question of the book that he's trying to answer, the main themes. He's introducing himself to us and his quest for wisdom. And he says that after searching out by wisdom all that is done, everything that happens with the works of men under heaven, he tells us what he's discovered. That God has given this burdensome task to the sons of men so they might be exercised by it. That all is a breath, chasing after wind, and what is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be numbered. Now, what is Solomon saying there? He's saying that in this world, there are some things that will not be fixed. Some problems that will not be solved. Some things that will not be straightened out. Some holes that will never be filled. In verse 13, we do have another issue of translation. Because I want to put to you, actually, Solomon's reminding us of the curse. The curse that's been placed upon the whole human race, the earth, when Adam fell into sin. So the verse says, God has given a burdensome task to the sons of men with which they may be exercised. Well, it's difficult to put that into English. But the word for exercise is really the same word as burdensome task in Hebrew. And so it's doubled for emphasis. And the real sense of the word is it means God has weighed man down. God has put something heavy on man that pushes him to the ground. And that is the lot of the sons of man. And man, of course, in the Hebrew, is the word Adam. And so literally, it's the sons of Adam, God has put a burden on us. To burden us. Now, sons of Adam is, of course, as remember in our introduction, we saw Ecclesiastes is always looking back to Genesis 3 and the garden and what went wrong. And of course, we're all sons of Adam as members of the human race. And sons in the Bible or sonship is really all about inheritance. It's about what you receive from your father or ancestor. So what Solomon's really saying is we've all inherited, as Adam's children, a burden, a weight on us that pushes us to the ground. He is thinking of the curse, how our work will become toil, the ground will be thorns and thistles, and one day we return to the ground as dust. And that's the heavy weight on us. And he's saying one of his conclusions is in this fallen state, what is crooked cannot be made straight. Not everything will be put right. What is lacking cannot be numbered. Not everything lost can be found. Not everything broken can be healed. Or in the words of a well-known nursery rhyme, all the king's horses and all the king's men could not put Humpty Dumpty together again. That's what he's saying. Under sin, under the curse, not every disease will be cured. There will be justice, injustice and inequality, crime. We will die. People will sin and suffer the negative consequences. People will do the right thing and suffer the negative consequences. Not every marriage will be a happy one. Not every war is going to end justly. Life will not always be fair. And there's not going to be an answer to every problem under the sun, because we're in this fallen state. Now, this is going to be something that the whole book will ruminate upon with us and look at from different angles and consider. It's a realistic assessment of life under the sun, as sons of Adam. And so when I say having a healthy Christian pessimism is something we should learn from Solomon, this is what I mean. To remember this reality of what life is really like. Now, it doesn't mean, as Solomon's going to show us, it doesn't mean we should despair or lose hope. It doesn't mean we give up. It doesn't mean we should be pessimistic people. It doesn't mean we should stop trying to make the world a better place. It doesn't consign us to a kind of indifference of just shrug your shoulders. But healthy Christian pessimism recognises these realities of the curse. And Ecclesiastes is going to teach us how to live wisely in this situation. How to live with faith, courage, and humility in this real world. And so this is one of the main things that Solomon's laying out here in his introduction. And there is wisdom, there's benefit in having this right kind of pessimism. Well, first, because it means, well, it gives us the right diagnosis of the problem. First, by admitting that there is a problem. It's to say on a profound way, the world is not as it should be. It's not as it was created to be. We can say to people, yes, the world is crazy and upside down and wrong. And we can say to people that feeling, that sense you have, that life can be a burden, that something is deeply wrong, that evil is wrong, that suffering is wrong. We can say, you are right to think that way. And suffering and evil and sin and death is not how it's meant to be. And of course, God has graciously revealed what is wrong. It's our sin. It's our fall. Like a doctor who has to, you know, determine the patient's illness before they can provide the right treatment. We can only truly help people in their suffering and in their sin when we accept the teaching of the scriptures, when we understand the world is broken, that this is a place where the crooked often isn't made straight, and it's all because of the broken relationship with God. So it gives us the right diagnosis, the right starting point. Christian pessimism teaches us to be humble. Humble about ourselves and our place in the world. I mean, we are just a breath. And do you remember those verses where Solomon says, do you know, probably in a generation or two, no one will even remember you, which is a very humbling thought. And he's telling us to have realistic expectations for what can happen in life. You see, in every generation, and in some more than others, there can be an idealistic, maybe naive spirit that leads people to chase after a utopia on earth, to try and make heaven on earth. A spirit that believes that with more effort, more money, more education, more technology, mankind can solve all its problems and fix things and save the world. We just need the right knowledge. We just need the right leadership. Nothing's impossible. Now, I mean, that was certainly the spirit of much of the 20th century in the Western world. As countries saw advances in medicine and technology and prosperity, there was a huge spirit of optimism about the future. If you go back and read the writings of philosophers and even churchmen, say 1910, just over 100 years ago, they had this incredible optimism about what the next century would bring in terms of benefits to mankind. Because the problem was that whole attitude was godless. It was built on faith in mankind and not faith in God. So inevitably, it's led to the disappointment, even the despair that characterises the 21st century, that the spiritual malaise that we're living in. Because yet again, we're having to face up to the truth. We don't have all the answers. And in many ways, the world hasn't changed. Man's problems haven't changed. We've got all this technology now. We've got all the medicine. We're so much richer than people used to be. We've got so much more knowledge. But the world remains a very broken place. Not everything crooked can be made straight. What is lacking cannot be counted. So, Christian wisdom, healthy Christian pessimism, teaches us to be humble. To humble about mankind's abilities. Humble about what we build and how long it can last. And the realism that gives you is it means that with that mindset, we should factor into all our works, anything we build or organise or anything we're trying to improve, that we take into account human sinfulness and weakness. So there's a need for security and fail-safes and accountability. We shouldn't be surprised when people sin and do terrible things and that things go wrong. And I want to put it to you, what dominates in our culture and society is a lot of secular, idealistic thinking. Leaders who don't believe in God and don't believe the Bible's teaching about the human condition, well, in pride, they've misjudged how the world really is and how to wisely work in it. But we should know better. So there's much to learn from this that Solomon is going to teach us. But the last thought I wanted to say as part of the introduction of these few verses is most of all this healthy Christian pessimistic worldview is meant to inspire us to long for heaven and to long for the kingdom of God. We should not be deceived or distracted into thinking it's about building a utopia here on earth. We're going to put our hope in the right place, in the eternal Lord God. And that's where, again, Solomon will take us. If this world, the whole system, is under sin, under the curse, the only hope is someone who's outside the world, who's above it and beyond it and greater than it. Only someone there can redeem it and really fix it. Someone from outside the system, so to speak. And the good news is that there is an eternal and holy, living God. And understand what Solomon's trying to do. One of the things he's trying to do in this book with this honest pessimism is he's trying to stir up in us, the reader, a hunger, a thirst, a desire for something better beyond this world. For real help and real hope. And he wants us to face all the uglinesses head on of the miseries of this life because of the curse, so that we will long and we will search for that true help which comes only from God. So a right kind of healthy Christian pessimism helps us keep the right priorities. Sometimes Eeyore is right. And it tells us that the most important thing we should do with our time and our lives is believe and trust in the gospel and look for that glory and that everlasting kingdom to come. And so I hope I've convinced you there's a good side, a good kind of healthy Christian pessimism.